You're listening to Extra Time, driven by Continental.
How are you feeling after that, Matt?
I feel a lot better than Bob.
Extra Time is exactly how I find out what's going on in the MLS.
Maybe this podcast has influenced me a little bit as well.
Get lost.
Everybody up here, every single day, goes into the office, into the laboratory, to try to cook up some great stuff for you guys.
That's why he's here!
From New York, New York, you are listening to Extra Time, driven by Continental from my apartment in Bed-Stuy, Brooklyn. I am Andrew Wiebe with my partners in soccer who are chomping at the bit here. Charlie Davies has been doing warm-up dunks in the pre-show meeting after Sporting KC loses. David Goss, Charlie, Matt
Chris Doyle. Kringle.
We're down to
whatever
four.
What
is going on with you? Before Charlie, just hold off, man. I know. I get it. You feel giddy. You had me like defending the fort for a while now, and the fort has been overrun. Sporting Kansas City lose tonight, 3-0. Or if you're listening tomorrow, last night, 3-0 to Minnesota United, aka Too Hot Boy, to Kevin Molino. Let's just start. Doyle, what is on your face? For those of you who are listening, there are, I want to say, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 ornaments in your beard, two of which light
my lights. Yeah.
And I'm just.
So you asked what was on my face, and then you asked
why. I guess why. Why is it on your face?
Tis the season, Andrew. Tis the season. Santa brought me an early gift. They're called beard baubles. And, you know, I started putting them on in the pre-show. The production crew seemed to like them.
Wait, so those are people. They're specifically made for the beard.
That's what I was told
by Rebecca.
I told this is not a Rebecca gift. This was a Santa gift.
This is not a gag gift. This is something to be worn in public and possibly on a stream or a podcast that might be seen by thousands of people.
Yeah.
Fair.
Yeah. Sounds like Doyle's getting free stuff.
That's a better performance. Like you look better tonight.
That's what Christmas is, David.
We saw Doyle getting hooked up last time, right? Last year.
What did he get?
Remember all the Heineken posts?
That's a different age, different time.
Yeah. wasn't that 30 years ago?
That was the summer. Yeah, no, they went with all their influencers for the playoffs. What are you going to do?
It definitely wouldn't be the beard bobbles. Once you pop those in, you're good to go. All right, four teams remain. We're going to talk through it all tonight. We've been enjoying doing these post-game shows that also double as the podcasts. So if you're listening now, awesome. Please still go download the podcast. We'd love to have you still go download the podcast. That'd be great. But four teams left. Seattle Sounders, Minnesota United. The Sounders will host that game out west, the Western Conference Final, on Monday at 9:30 p.m. Eastern on FS1. Then Columbus Crew, New England Revolution. That's the Eastern Conference Final. That's on Sunday at 3 p.m. on ABC. Mm-hmm. If you're trying to work out the math, you don't have the overall standings in front of you. It goes a little something like this for MLS Cup hosting rights. Columbus Crew, should they win? They're hosting it. It's in Columbus. If they lose, then the Western Conference will host. Whoever wins out there, Sounders or Minnesota. New England, sorry. It's not coming back to Gillette. Not
happening for you. They're on the road anyways.
Nice. They're if no one wins, though,
go somewhere else if they win.
Then the Revs could host themselves, right, Charlie? The Revs could just play an inter-scrimmage for MLS Cup.
Yeah.
Is that the right term?
Who's the underdog in that game? I just had this. We had a question out there, and we got a bunch of tweets. It said, "When's the Kevin Molino fan club meeting?" It's meeting right now. We're kicking it off right now. So before we do anything else, let us just dig into what has been a career season for the legend out of Trinidad and Tobago, Kevin Molino. What a player he is! What a two goals they were. He and Babelo Reynoso are just peas in a pod. It's 1-2s. It's cheeky movement. It's incredible combination play, but they almost didn't have the opportunity to put this game away. When you look at this match, Sporting KC fans, and we got a lot of mail, a lot of tweets from them, including from one Joel Wiebe, they had their opportunities. They started well, and it just fell off. What happened in this game from your perspective, Doyle?
I think you kind of hit the nail on the head. They started really well, and then they just kind of fell off. And Dane St. Clair made some spectacular saves, and Michael Boxall with that clearance. And then this was the first chance of the game for Minnesota, and it was a brilliantly created chance. And it was, Babelo and Molino, and so they got that 1-0, and then all of a sudden, things kind of started falling apart real quick for Sporting KC. And when you have the two best players on the field, which Minnesota did tonight. Arguably the best four players on the field, really. You're probably going to win the game. Molino stepped up, and Babella stepped up, and they got that corner kick, headed goal to make it 3-0 before halftime, and that was it. That was the game. And it was like it was a spectacular performance from Minnesota United, and it was unexpected, but also kind of not, because we've been saying on the show for a long time that Kansas City's defense is weak. And now I give the floor to Charlie Davies.
It is exactly what we thought was going to happen. They were not valued as a team that was going to be really competing for MLS Cup because that defense is weak. Bottom line, weak. You look at their regular season. Sure, they finished top of the West. But who are they playing? Again, who are they playing? They're not playing strong teams. They're not playing teams that are going to be competing who they'd be competing with in the playoffs. Colorado, look, playing in Cincinnati. They're playing Houston Dynamo. Yeah, you can pick up your wins there. But if you're playing against Seattle, Portland, even Vancouver.
How did you throw Vancouver in here? They beat Minnesota twice during the regular season, Charlie. What are you even talking about? Like, go into this thing. You're dribbling in circles. You should be dunking on me. Where are you at?
Look at Minnesota's lineup. What do you mean, where am I at? Look at the score line. Yeah, where are you at? Look at the score line. And they lost. They've got three goals scored on them against San Jose, who was very lucky to be in the match, be in the playoffs, let alone be in the match. So for me, you look tonight, and it really showcases how Sporting Kansas City, and I've spoken to a number of players in Major League Soccer who said, this might be the weakest back line they've seen in a long time across the league. That every team loved to play against Sporting Kansas City because of that back line. Zero fear factor. You knew you could take advantage of your 1v1 situations. They didn't track properly the runners, whether you're running in behind or whether you're using a diagonal run. The center backs, they never were in tandem. They weren't working well together. As you saw Puncic on the first goal or second goal, he jumps forward so late. And I think when you're watching normally, you're like, man, that was offside. You're like, oh, that he's way off. No, he's not, because of Puncic. And I've been telling people from the beginning, their center backs were never in a rhythm. They were never working well together. And we saw in the three matches where Sporting Kansas City played against Minnesota this year, it was Winston Reed and Puncic. It was Puncic and Graham Smith played. Beasler played in two of those three. There was never a back four that you said, this is the back four from minute one to the last game of the season. For me, it was clear to see from a long time ago that when they got into the playoffs and they're playing the top teams in the Western Conference, they were going to get lit up.
And they didn't have to play the top teams. They gave up three to San Jose.
Seattle Sounders. Imagine if they played the Sounders and they had to face Jordan Morris, Rui Diaz, and Ladero. Ooh, this one could have got ugly. This could have got ugly. So
it did get ugly.
But in fairness, Charlie, everything you said is 100% correct. But what we talked about this week was, if Pulido's there, they have a chance.
Correct.
Because they should have scored three. And if Pulido's in, they score four or five, and then this is a 5-4 game. This is the way Sporting KC plays soccer this year. This is what the San Jose game was, and this is what it was always going to be coming into this game. And they pulled DiBassi out of position multiple times in the first half and had a ball cleared off the line. Dane St. Clair made a great save. Johnny Russell, I don't think you can blame him totally, but in 1v1 and could have laid it off for Jurso, tries to shoot himself, has it saved by St. Clair. Right there, it could have been 3-0 at that point. For KC, this is the soccer they have to play. They have to finish those chances because they are always going to give up the other chances. On the other side, I would say Minnesota, the best thing they did tonight was the shutout in the second half. Now, how uneventful they were able to make the second half in a game that KC had to go forward.
I have to mention this. Adrian Heath, in his post-game presser, we just got from producer Anders, who's monitoring as we do this, said that he asked Peter Vermees before the game how he managed to keep a straight face when Peter said the Sporting KC were the underdogs. Now, we know these two are boys. Like, I have to imagine it's the old, like, you know, Alex Ferguson routine. Yeah. They share a little glass, you know, a little vino at the end of every single game. And producer Anders has a present for us. And if you'd like to roll that present, I think we'd all enjoy it right about now.
They're a very, very good team. It's why they're favored to win. So Peter Vermees also said today that he actually kind of considers you guys the favorites.
Well, I got on really well with Peter, so I'll have to ask him the question on what criteria he's going on.
Were you saying that Minnesota are favored to win, or did I mishear that?
Well, that's what pundits are saying, so I'm going with what they say.
Is it the fact that they've won the West and the top of the league and very rarely get beat that we are favorites there? We haven't won a game there, so yeah, it's a little bit mystifying that one.
That's what I hear. That's what I see.
Do you still view the team as underdogs, or will you have more confidence moving forward?
I didn't hear that word spoken once over the last three or four days in preparing for the game. I don't think those kind of comments motivate athletes at the professional level.
Oh my! Hey, shout out to Galena. Producer Galena actually put that together. She's the one that's on these press conferences.
Okay,
Galena's
passing along information.
Galena's the truth. Hey, that was said from the wise man. He said, "I don't need to play those games because players."
I feel like, you know, I think
Bruce showed his rings off and was like, "I don't think it motivates professionals."
I think we thought that was like the underdog stuff was for the media and the pundits. I think it was actually just those two, Keith just and Peter Vermees, just like needling each other back and forth. Mm-hmm. Either way, that doesn't matter in the end because the nicest rivalry in sports ended up pretty lopsided. We just went in on Sporting Kansas City, and we'll do more of that via some questions from people. But we have to get to the team that actually won this thing.
Yes, we do.
The team that's moving on. The team that showed in spurts that they have arguably the two most talented, arguably is the key word, two most talented midfielders in the league right now in Kevin Molino and Babela Reynoso.
Stop.
I mean, the way they... Yeah. I said arguably. Come on.
It's not even arguing.
You're not going to put Nico Adero in there. You wouldn't say Nico Adero could push himself into that category. You wouldn't say Zelrayan could be in that category. You wouldn't say that
wouldn't
Carlos
say,
Hill would be in that category.
Did you just do the old Reddit switcheroo?
You just threw in...
I said arguably two of the... Why are you bogging us down? Let's continue.
I'm saying don't throw those names into that equation. Is what I'm saying.
Okay, fine. So
you don't think Reynoso's on a level with those guys?
No, I do. I'm saying they're among them.
I'm not talking to you. No, I'm talking to Charlie.
Said, not yet. No.
Really?
You don't think Babela Reynoso's on a level with Carlos Heel?
Not yet.
And Lucas Zelarayán?
Not
Please
yet.
Explain. Please explain. To a guy who has 13 assists in 15 games since his arrival, with 6 assists in the playoffs
alone. You can
throw in
all the numbers.
Charlie, they've lost one game in the 11 that he started. One game.
Yes.
I'm going to have to start holding Weeby back because this is starting to get unfair. Continue, Charlie.
I need to see him play like that next round against Seattle, against Nico Ladero. If he can do that and have success, then you already know he's getting thrown up into that mix of the best midfielders in this league. Pozuelo, Ladero, Carlos Heel, and Lucas Zelarayán. If he can do that against this Seattle Sounders team, then I will say
Carlos Heel's played 4 games in the last year.
I don't think Heel and Zelarayán get in there either.
If you're saying Carlos Heel is not in that mix, then you don't watch soccer, is what I'm telling you. You don't know what a shot is or a pass is if you tell me that Carlos Heel is not one of the best midfielders in this league.
He is one of the best, but that's not... Weeby said the best in the league.
No.
And right now, are you going to take him over Ladero? Are you going to take any of these guys over? Anyway, we're getting bogged down.
I always said one of the best, but okay.
Wax poetic on Reynoso. Somebody just come in here and give people that maybe haven't watched Minnesota very much...
I mean, Charlie should.
...what they've been missing. I don't want to hear from
Charlie.
Charlie's taking enough airtime as it is. It's you or Doyle. That's it.
I would say this was one of those games for him. He's been phenomenal since he's gotten here. He loves to find the game, so he's always an option for his teammates. He covers right to left, and he's always a piece of the attack. And we saw early on he was fine being the guy before the pass, and now he's become the guy with that final pass. And he knows where Molino wants it, and he's started to understand when his fullbacks get forward and all those things. But he's clean on the ball. He beats his man 1v1 when you get tight to him. If you don't, you give him enough space to just destroy you, whether it's a through ball, clipped over the top, outside of the boot. He has every pass in his locker. And so then you can't really defend him. And on this team in Minnesota, you add the runners around him and then the safe options behind him in Gregus. And today it was Ozzie Alonso. And that's when he is able to become unstoppable. We haven't seen the goal scoring from him yet. Maybe that comes, maybe it doesn't. I think if you get, 14 assists in 15 games, it doesn't really matter what you do in front of goal yourself. I think that's kind of enough. But he has been as advertised. This is a Boca Juniors starter. We talked about Reynoso watch for what? Maybe 14 months?
Yeah, it was easy eight. Yeah, easy
eight. Time. And at this point, he's got a gentleman's assist in the Western Conference semifinals in his first year in the playoffs. So it's pretty impressive.
Let's go, Andres, let's go to that clip that we drew up a little bit. And part of this on this first goal, watch how Reynoso comes off the back line and finds space between the defensive midfield and the back line. Nobody gets tight to him. They get focused on the ball. And he's immediately able to find Molino on this run that Sporting Kansas City never tracked. This was part of Reynoso's genius, is that as the team slides over towards the sideline, he initially takes up a position alongside the center backs, then slowly drops off of them. And any team that plays a single pivot, which is what Sporting Kansas City do, is susceptible to that type of play from a number 10, because Ilie's busy sliding over to try to contain anything that happens with Molino on the ball. So when Molino dummies it, it freezes Ilie, and nobody from that Sporting back line steps up. Now, you have to wonder if it was 2 years ago, Matt Beisler and Ike Opara together. I think they're probably a little bit tighter to Reynoso right there. But Reynoso's really, really good at picking out those spots. So he's able to play, he just makes the game look slow, but not in a bad way. He makes it look slow and easy because he always has a little bit of extra time and space that most players aren't able to get with their movement. Most players aren't able to find. And when you have that time and space and you're wearing the number 10, you play for Boca Juniors, you're probably going to end up with a lot of assists. And he's got a ton right now, and he's playing spectacular soccer. As Andrew Wiebe said, I think makes him the best midfielder in the entire league.
I don't know. And you're trolling me right now?
I can hear
the Christmas ornaments in your beard cracking as you speak. I just can't take you, Father Christmas over here. I feel like
this is some of the best podcasting we've ever done.
Let me ask you guys this. Do you think next year the next step is that Minnesota controls the flow of the game through Reynoso rather than for him to pop up and find spots and they play a little more reactive this year? Is that the next stage, or is this who he is? And that's fine.
They weren't reactive tonight. I mean, they had more of the ball and they were under the cosh for the first 15 minutes. But once they got through that, they were running the game. And part of the way that team is put together, part of the brilliance of having Jan Gregus and Ozzy Alonso is that they're both such good passers and movers of the ball that you don't need your number 10 to drop back and get all over the ball and run the show. He can pick his spots. So I don't think we end up seeing that from Reynoso in either next week or Monday Ignite, I guess, or in 2021. He doesn't have to do it.
Yeah, I agree. You have Gregus and Ozzy Alonso in behind you. So for Reynoso, it's just, you guys do the dirty work. I'm going to pop up into the spots. And once I put myself in a position where I can be on the half turn, or you can play it into space, I can take my first touch attacking the goal. And I have the defenders, center backs, not knowing whether to come with me, whether to drop. That's where he makes his money, because he can keep center backs on their heels. He's unpredictable where he pops up. So it's the perfect signing for this Minnesota side.
Guys, I know, by the way, that it's Ozzy and awesome, but you got to give credit to Heath for starting him. He's played, 10, 20 minutes in the last 5 months of soccer? And to start him in a Western Conference semifinals on the road, I know it's a guy who's done it in this moment. I thought that was a fairly bold call, especially with Dotson on the bench, and it worked out for him. And that's why Adrian Heath makes that money.
Exactly. Exactly. Now, look, next year for the Loons, that's a different story, because Kevin Molino's out of a contract. He's 30 years old. He's had a career year, 13 goals. Also, who are they going to have at center forward? That's an open question. TBD.
Robin Lode. Come on.
Yeah, I guess so. I mean, honestly, this works. I wrote before this game, this is what they should have done against Sporting Kansas City center backs, because, Charlie, you were right. They can't deal with that movement. They don't communicate well enough. They're not linked together well enough. They can't deal with being pulled out of position, and that's what those guys were going to do. They were going to play these little 1-2s all around the box. They were going to occupy unorthodox, let's say, positions that you don't expect them to be in. And then they're going to be in positions to finish. And all four, really, other than Reynoso, who's just going to be the pass man, can finish in front of goal. Can we real quick, though, talk about the finish from Kevin Molino in the second goal?
Absurd.
I mean, are you kidding me?
Absurd.
Over the shoulder, Willie Mays style, sliding, throw your right boot around it into the bottom corner. Timmy Melia is so surprised.
What about the pass,
even put the pass is absurd, too. But are you kidding me? Melia does not even jump because he doesn't think there's a chance that somebody could shoot or attempt to shoot this ball.
Yes, but think of the pass where he has to curve it. It's at the top of the six. So it's just enough pace that Kevin Molino can catch up to it. It's not enough that Tim Melia feels he can come out and get it. Mm-hmm. And it's curving and it's just the right weight. And it's against the grain as well. Phenomenal pass. I don't want to take anything
Charlie away. Charlie doesn't like goal Molino. Scorers. Charlie's thing.
I don't want to take anything away from Molino. That was a fantastic finish. And it's a very difficult finish.
But I also want to throw in sublime. I thought Robin Lud had moments where he actually played. He did target striker things well. There was four or five times where he dropped back when they were under pressure and took a first touch or laid it off for them to get out of that pressure. And all of that was right down the middle. All of those were moments that, which is why I thought Kai would get a start in this game. And Lud did those when he had to. And it allowed Minnesota to kind of get through those opening minutes and then get into the parts where they could, I don't know, rip.
But you don't need the thing. You don't need a Kai in this game because you don't need to occupy the Sporting Kansas City center backs. You just move around a little bit and they let you go and they never get pressure to you. So obviously, yeah, Lud was the right guy to start up top, and he created a ton of room for Molino and Reynoso, who at this point with the way they're playing, don't need the help.
Before we get to Seattle, Minnesota, and also finish up the season for Sporting Kansas City, I just want to ask you guys what you think of the quote-unquote project for Minnesota. Because it was, in 2017, they were still bad. Like, 2018, they brought in Ike, they brought in Ozzy.
No, it was 2019. 2017 was their first year. 2018,
okay, they were even 2018, worse defensively. Yeah, it's 20, sorry. It's been a long yeah. ride in 2020. Like, these years all just, they're not real anymore. You got it from Doyle there. But the state of the project. Last year, it felt like it was a Band-Aid a little bit. Mm-hmm. This year, it feels less like a Band-Aid. It feels more sustainable because it was guys that you didn't necessarily expect to be as good or play the leading roles that they have played, whether that's from goal all the way up to the front, than it was before. It feels like this is something that is truly sort of moving forward and has a trajectory and is stable. Yeah.
Yeah. It's also younger.
Yeah.
A lot of what happened last year was 30 plus guys playing well, which was great. And Ike and Ozzy and all that. But what was the future on that this year? St. Clair, Dotson playing strong again, Lud, Reynoso. These are all guys that can be there for a while. So you know what that core can look like going forward. And I think coming out of last year, there was always a question mark. What were they going to do if Ike was hurt? And Ike historically has gotten hurt. This year they showed it doesn't matter. Without him for a single game, they played well in the MLS's back tournament, and then now they're in a Western Conference Finals, maybe win MLS Cup. So I think a lot of that proved the questions coming out of last year.
Well, how many players, how many teams could handle losing a defender of the year?
And the goalkeeper of the year, by the way, although I don't really think, again, right. Vito Minone was the goalkeeper of the year, but that's ancient history.
But there's not too many teams that could rebound and have the season they've had without the defender of the year starting every match or having a big role in the team. And so to build off of Goss's point, it's the development of players like Hassani Dotson, Chase Gasper, younger players. Now we're seeing Dane St. Clair, who I think initially everyone was like, too young, too raw. Well, he's
not making everyone.
Big time saves. Not everyone, but a lot of people thought maybe they're going to lose their edge. He's not losing that starting spot, and he's only going to get better. He's just scratching the surface. So now Minnesota found their long-term goalkeeper. So, I mean, it's been a great year, I think, in every respect for Minnesota United.
And that's why they go into the Western Conference Finals as favorites.
Massive, undisputed favorites. We will get to that in a second. Sporting Kansas City, we've talked about what was missing. I just want to get some takes from their fans in here because they had some good ones. Joel Wiebe. Among them, hit him up. Quote, here's from Joel. Remember when I was complaining about Zusi's athleticism when defending on my last extra time hot take? It's leaked directly into the midfield. We've gotten exposed on the counter all year long because we handed out a bunch of Alex Gordon-esque contracts to SKC legends. It's time for a changing of the guard. That's what he says. Now, Andy Edwards reminded me, and if you don't listen to Andy and Talking Touches and you're in Kansas City, you're making a big mistake, that Roger Espinosa and Matt Beisler are out of contract in a few weeks, or their contracts expire. So there may be a little bit of a changing of the guard coming here. What do you do if you're Kansas City? How do you think about this if you're Peter Vermes, as you look at what sort of built you from, what was it, like really 10 on? The Beislers, the Zusis, the Espinosas, and then these draft picks, and then all these other players that came in and filled roles and made them perennial, you know, MLS Cup contenders, to be honest, even though they only won one championship. What now? What do you do?
So let me just add in before you guys answer that, because Weeby put out a tweet saying we're about to go live. Leanne in Kansas, who's a legend of the show, came back and said, I'm not worried. Felipe Gutierrez is out the whole year. Pulido missing in the playoffs. Find an athletic center back to pair with the guys you have, and this seems fine. So I think the question has to be asked. They were first in the West, whatever the schedule was.
Yeah.
They did spend big on Pulido. Is there a changing, or should they be even worried? There. Now you guys can answer.
I think you can. I think it's a fair question because, for instance, if you talk about Beisler, he got phased out this year.
Mm-hmm. I mean,
that's the deal. He got phased out. Graham Zusi got hurt. He wasn't a part of it. Jalen Lindsay seems to be the future for them at that position. Busioa came in and had a pretty good year, though this was not his game by any stretch of the imagination. You know how I feel about Roger, so I won't say a word about the ledge that is Rog. So I can't comment on that. I'm very biased when it comes to Roger Espinosa. But I think what Peter has done to get them here, it's not a full changing of the guard, but there are some clear holes. And those holes have not been remedied in the market the last couple of years. Pulido, huge hit, massive hit. If he's healthy, to me, he's the best 11 center forward in this league. Now, if he's healthy, that I see you making the faces, Doyle. I think he would have been if he's healthy the entire year. But in central midfield, both defensive midfield and box-to-box, if Felipe comes back, great, but he just got injured for a full year, and I think he's around 30. Your back line, across the back line, has to improve. I mean, there are big holes. There are big holes, and there isn't a track record the last 5 years of just automatic hits, especially in those particular positions.
It's getting harder and harder to play with a single pivot in the modern game, because it with that clip that we showed you with Bello finding that space, you can usually find that space against teams that play with a single defensive midfielder. It's even harder to play as a single defensive midfielder if you're not super athletic, which Ilya is not. Right there where Bello is on the ball, suddenly he has that space and is able to rip you up. If you're going to play with a single pivot, you have to have two center backs who work in tandem and know when to step, whose responsibility it is, and are athletic enough or smart enough in reading space to get back and cover for each other. Sporting Kansas City do not have that. And they had they were great 10 years ago. They had Matt Beisler, and Peter did an amazing job developing him. They brought in Aurelien Collin, who was a fantastic signing at the time. Then they got Ike Opara, frankly, off the scrap heap in San Jose after he had spent a couple of years injured. He finally got healthy, and he was the best defender in the league for a couple of years. And other than those three guys, they have not been able to bring in a single center back who really looks the part. And I think Peter Vermes has to maybe compromise a little bit. Like, there's not a lot of teams that play a 4-3-3 anymore. There's not a lot of teams that play with a single defensive midfielder anymore. It's really, really hard to do that in the modern game if you don't have elite center backs. And Sporting Kansas City right now do not have elite center backs. So that is the needle he has to thread this offseason. Does it mean it switched to the 4-2-3-1? Does it mean new personnel? Does it mean both?
Big question.
Yeah, you're spot. And I would also throw in, if you do change your formation, you have to be willing to adapt one. And I think all coaches go through this phase of like, this was my go-to formation. These are my go-to tactics. But as the game... the evolution of the game, as we continue to see year after year, and tactics change, formation change, you also have to adapt as a coach. And I have no doubt that Peter Vermes will adapt, because like people are saying, it's changing of the guard. Well, you also have to change your formation because of the players that you bring in. And I do believe if you play with a pivot, a defensive midfielder, that guy has to be Tyler Adams-esque. Jermaine Jones-esque, someone who can cover a lot of grounds, has an incredible engine, and can break up plays, and you have no worries playing with one. But how many guys can do that job? There's not too many in this league. There's not too many in this world at this point that can do that and do it consistently. So I do anticipate him going to a two pivot midfield system where you have two defensive midfielders who can do that job for him.
And not just change formation, by the way, because the other part of this is all of the center backs he's brought in have come from outside of MLS in this spell. Fontas.
Yep.
Now Winston Reed, Puncic.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not going to say Peter Vermes has something against American center backs. That would be an absurd thing to say. But I think there is a heavy value on American center backs. That was why he traded Ico Parr. He had so much value. That's why Walker Zimmerman got traded last year, because it's a position where you know Americans have been successful and you don't have to use an international spot.
Look at Henry Kessler right now.
Dave Romney at Nashville helped put together one of the best seasons. And so there has to also be a point where what are the players that you're bringing in to fill that spot? And it has consistently not worked with international center backs for him. And maybe it's that he's trying to bring in two and the pairing is off. And so I would love to see them go out and try and find a trade this year for someone from in the league
draft.
To at least bring a little experience for the draft.
There's a number of ACC center backs.
But the draft is not guaranteed.
There's a number of ACC center backs who could play Major League Soccer and make an impact. That's all I'm going to say.
With MLS teams for a small fee, you can email Charlie Davies at MLSsoccer.com.
Hotmail.com.
Yeah, that's Hotmail. Pretty sure it's Hotmail. I'm like 95% sure it's Hotmail. So start guessing your Charlie Davies Hotmail accounts right now. But the thing is, when you say that, Dave, I think about Peter Vermes in the market. Peter Vermes in the market is not a guy that goes out and does the $1.2 million deal. He's the guy that gets the $1.2 million. So there's part of this here that I'm like, would Peter do that? And if you're a opposing GM and Peter's calling about your young American or just American center back, I'm not giving him away for free. It's going to cost him a lot because Peter's calling about it. And if Peter wants him, I know he has value. So maybe there's a little bit of like a two-edged short sword there with the trades that they've done and the value that they've gotten and the way that might be reacted to. Maybe he just thought he could game the system by going overseas. Right now, it hasn't worked. Let's move on. Let's talk Sounders, Minnesota United, Monday. That one is going to be on FS1 at 9:30 p.m. Eastern, Fox Deportes, TSN, TVA, of course. Those are for all these games as well. What do we see in this game? I mean, now, of course, the underdog card can be played seamlessly by Adrian Heath.
By Brian Schmetzer.
I think we're playing right into Adrian's hands with this. I think he likes this underdog talk. It distracts us from the soccer. How does Minnesota win this game? How might Seattle lose this game? Because I think the assumption is that Seattle will win this game. I mean, we literally called it inevitable, their march to MLS Cup on our last show.
Okay. You got me on the question asking style. But Minnesota can win the game by the same thing they did today, which is Kevin Molino and Reynoso on their game can be the two best players on the field on Monday. And so this is a team that will score against Seattle because Seattle has issues as well along that back line. They like to push their fullbacks up at times so you can catch them in that space. And we didn't see it as much with Dallas. And I know Shane O'Neill's been a stopgap, but Yaimar and Shane O'Neill have not been locked down. Or if Arriaga comes back in, whatever it is, there are gaps along that back line that you can pull them out of and then have those wingers cut into. And LAFC created a number of chances because of that. So I wouldn't be surprised if Minnesota is able to create opportunities and get goals in this game. The question for me is, can they stop on the other end? Because the opportunities they gave up against Sporting KC, Seattle's not going to let them go. Rui Diaz is not going to miss the opportunities that they had. Jordan Morris coming off the wing. All those things are more dangerous from Seattle than they were from Sporting KC today. So that's the question mark for this team. Can Ozzie turn around after, 4 days? Not playing for 5-6 months. If not, then Dotson comes into this team.
Ozzie played a bunch of games in October, and then he played 10 minutes last game. So it hasn't been 5-6 months, just so you know.
Okay. Can he turn around and start again at 35, 36?
Yeah.
The answer is yes.
And if not, does this team have enough defensively?
You will have to get it done. Kill Ozzie Alonso.
Probably.
To prevent him from starting this game.
And don't act
at
like
Seattle.
Don't act like Kevin Molino's a huge drop off. Hassani Dotson's a huge drop off either. I mean, Hassani Dotson, when he's in form and fit, he's a really good player.
I agree with that, but Dotson
really high ceiling.
But I would say Dotson Dotson's been fantastic. Ozzie, you know, is going to be able to control the space, control himself, not get pulled out more often than Dotson.
I'm just saying, so that would be my word. Huge drop off.
But and period,
you love Minnesota, Seattle. Like whenever you play against your former club,
Roldan and Nico Lodero, I'm taking all three of those every time. They're not going to be able to play through that midfield the way they played through Sporting KC's midfield.
Mm-hmm. Well, correct. We know how Minnesota are going to approach the game. Defensive.
Which is
we're going to park that bus and you can't break us down. They're going to challenge Seattle to break them down. And then that's going to leave counterattacks. Reynosa gets on the ball, tries to find Ethan Finley into the channels, Kevin Molino. They're going to play that game. Set pieces are going to be really important. It's going to come down to really being pragmatic. And we've seen Adrian Heath always go back to that type of game plan, tactical game plan, whenever they're playing against a team that are really the favorites. And they know, okay, if we do get ourselves stretched, they're going to hurt us. Everyone knows that. You can't play that game, wide open game, with the Seattle Sounders. Jordan Morris will eat you alive. And on top of that, Jordan Morris didn't have a good game against FC Dallas. He didn't play his best. Lodero didn't play his best. Rui Diaz didn't play his best. These guys are going to be hungry for that Western Conference final. They're not going to have two bad games in a row. You rarely see that. All three of them not play at their best consecutively. So from Minnesota's standpoint, it's we're going to defend. We're going to grind. We're going to make it really tough. We're going to constrict that middle. We're going to try and take away all the space for Lodero to really pick us apart. And if we can cut off Lodero and force their other midfielders try to beat us, we have a good shot.
Who do you think's going to win? Are we giving the 4-for-4 to the Sounders and just handing it to Adrian on a platter here for underdog status, or are we going to switch it up?
You know, I'm going. You don't even have to.
I know I'm going Seattle. I obviously know I'm going Seattle. I asked the question. Like, anybody going to go Minnesota?
I want to just to be that guy, but I'm not. No, the Sounders will pull off the upset. You know, it'll be the first really big test for Brian Schmetzer being underdogs at home. But I think they have it in them to shock the world and beat Minnesota United at home in the playoffs and for another trip to MLS Cup. That sound about right?
That sounds about right. All right, let's talk Eastern Conference. Columbus, New England, ABC on Sunday. ESPN Deportes as well, TSN, TVA. You can watch that on Sunday. Should be a good time, 3 p.m. Eastern, so right in the middle of the afternoon. Always enjoy those games. What's the soccer side of this one? Because I know what I'm enjoying right now from the non-soccer side, which is Bruce Arena coming out with some pretty spicy quotes, basically saying he's always developed good teams and coached good teams. And at his age, people thought he lost it. Well, I guess not. Bruce is riding him back there. And then Caleb Porter, I'm just remembering that moment with he and Bruce on the sidelines in Portland just going at each other. And, you know, I know that they're going to have a little something. And both these teams feel a little something. So what's the soccer side of this? Any thoughts on that, guys?
Oh, yeah. I'll jump right into this. It's the midfield trio of Zelarayan, Nagby, and Arthur. This is the key of the game right here. This is it. Their trio versus the New England Revolution's trio. And more importantly, it's Scott Caldwell and Matt Polster. How do they deal with Zelarayan and Nagby? Because we saw it in instances during the game against Orlando, when Scott Caldwell or Polster have to be pulled out of position and try and get to the sidelines, they leave a huge gap in the middle and they don't have the athleticism to get out there and cover someone like a Zelarayan or a Nagby 1v1. Just not going to happen. And so if that happens and they get pulled apart constantly, the Columbus Crew are going to win this game. To flip it, if Carlos Heel and Gustavo Bo, because Carlos is going to play on the right, he's going to naturally come inside. And when he comes inside, where does Gustavo Bo pop up? Are they marking him because he's just a roamer? He doesn't really have a position. And that's what makes it difficult when Carlos Heel's not on the field. Because Gustavo Bo tries to do too much, be the facilitator and the goal scorer and be able to roam. And when you're playing certain positions, you have to be tactically sound, which he's not. He's not known for that. So what now when you have Carlos Heel come in, how does that unbalance Columbus Crew? How do they deal with it? Can Nagby drop in and defend? Because he's going to have to. And Arthur, can he be the playmaker? Can he win those tackles? Can he kind of prevent Carlos Heel from having those combination plays with Gustavo Bo. And then we've seen the outside backs now with New England. They're bypassing Polster and Caldwell to use Tajon Buchanan and DeJuan Jones to get into the attack. And those two young players have really developed into outside backs who can influence the game because of their athleticism. And when they do get into the final third, they're a little creative. They're much more creative than you probably give them credit for. So I think that's where the game is won, is does New England deal with that midfield trio? Because that's really where the Columbus Crew are going to win this game, because Jussie Zardes is. He relies on service. He's not going to do anything by himself. But if he's given two, three, four chances to score a goal, he's going to finish one.
Charlie, do you not worry about the fullbacks?
I don't.
Because this isn't Kamal Miller going up against Tajon Buchanan, or I can't even remember who started for Montreal. Maybe it was Kizza.
I don't.
We're talking about Milton Valenzuela.
I do not.
And awful on the other side. You still think
I do not. Nope.
That Tajon gets the start there and is able to get into the attack?
Absolutely. Okay. No questions.
That'll be determined by if the Revs are able to kind of dominate midfield.
Yes.
And that is, Charlie's right. That's where the game will be won or lost, I think, or on set pieces. Because remember, the Revs are really terrible defensively on set pieces.
Also
and
true.
Columbus are pretty good. But the thing about Columbus is as good as they can be at times, they let you play. They don't make it that hard for you to play through midfield. So if you have guys like Heal especially, but even Polster and Caldwell can move the ball around a bit, if you let them start getting a rhythm and pulling you around, that'll clear out an entire side for Buchanan in particular on the overlap. And then you're stuck sort of scrambling, trying to get out to him and put pressure on the ball. And he has shown the ability, when he's attacking space rather than attacking a set defense, he has shown the ability to make plays in these playoffs. So I do think it is going to come down to that midfield battle. Nagby's going to have to play much better than he did against the Red Bulls. Zellerayan is going to have to actually be a little bit more disciplined and contribute something defensively, which I question him about. And getting back to the Ladero thing where we were kind of having fun before, saying like, oh, this guy's at this level, this guy's at this level. You never have to worry about Nico Ladero's defensive effort or contribution. And Taquito just jumped off. Oh, that hurt.
Because he's scared of the noise that's coming from your beard right now.
You never have to worry.
I'm surprised he's not on his lap.
He left a mark. You never have to worry about your defensive contribution, the defensive contribution of your number 10 if you're a Seattle Sounders fan. If you're a Crew fan, you kind of have to. If you're a Revs fan with Gustavo Bo playing underneath and kind of going wherever, at times he's going to need to drop back and put pressure on Darlington Nagby or even on Jonathan Mensah and not let them get comfortable distributing. Those are little things, but they're huge questions in this game. And I do think it kind of favors the Revs a little bit more just because Heal has been so good at finding those spots and making defenders come out to him. And when defenders come out to him and leave spaces open, he has just been masterful in his distribution of the ball and rearranging the pieces on the chessboard, so to speak, and opening gaps for the rest of the Revs' attack. But again, it might not all matter if the Revs can't defend on set pieces, which is an open question.
Who you got going through? It's not going to be an upset. It can't be an upset because there are no underdogs here. Bruce Arena says that is not a thing. Mm-hmm. Professional players do not respond to that. And certainly, I don't think at this point the Revs should think of themselves in that way, the way that they perform, the talent that they have. They shouldn't. They've been really good on the road. They can go to Columbus and win. No doubt about that. Meanwhile, Columbus said from the start, this is where we want to be. Well, this is where you are. Can you take the next step? Can you get to MLS Cup?
Yeah, I'm gonna go with the Revs, and it's just because there's
you feel that earthquake. Oh, yeah. The whole world just shifted on me. Mind blown.
Hey, let's not forget, I'm not just a homer like Andrew Wiebe. Oh my
god! Just set him up.
I picked the Revs to lose to Philly in the first round in my bracket because I didn't believe that they could get the job done in Philadelphia, but because of Bruce Arena's knowledge and tactical savviness to play that match in a different way. And Philadelphia had never seen Carlos Heal fit in 100%, change the game and completely outcoach Jim Curtin in that game. The next one against Oscar Pereira did the same thing. Their game plan of really using Tajon because they knew Nani wouldn't track back and defend. And then you're playing against Kamal Miller, who has to make a decision between guarding Carlos Heal or marking Tajon Buchanan, sometimes getting caught between two minds. and they got hurt and they couldn't recover. So now when I watch this Columbus Crew game, I think Bruce Arena is going to do the same thing. He's going to take away what Columbus are really good at, and that's getting Lucas Zelarayan on the ball and forcing Darlington Nagbe just to play side to side, because if Darlington Nagbe is not dribbling at you and pulling people out of positions to find Lucas Zelarayan, then they're not really that dangerous. And we know what Josh Izard is. He makes good runs in behind, but if he's not getting service, then he's not really going to hurt you. Bruce Arena knows Coach Jossie. He knows exactly what he can do to take away the Crew's strengths. And this Revolution team is playing with so much confidence. They play better on the road. So in this case, and they've already won at Mapfre Stadium in a playoff match, one that I was a part of, they're not afraid of this. They're going to win this game.
Who's going to make the Crew case? I know I'm wearing a Crew jersey, but
I'm going to take the Crew. I think it has to be mentioned. Last game, there was a number of players that were unavailable. There are more players that it's come out that will be unavailable for the next game. So we don't know exactly what type of group Columbus will have.
And you're still going to take them?
Yeah, I am. Hang on, Charlie. Let me get there. Give me a second.
All right.
I will still say I was let down by Columbus's performance against Nashville. Caleb Porter said they actually hadn't trained for a week going into that. If this is closer to the performance that Columbus is capable of putting together, even if the Revs are able to take away Zelarayan for some of this game, I still think with Nagbe controlling possession, and if it's not goal dangerous like it was against Nashville, it still keeps New England off the ball. It still keeps the fullbacks deeper for New England. And then I question New England's ability to create chances. It still plays to Columbus's pace. If it doesn't, and New England's fullbacks get forward, this is a Columbus team that's going to hurt them. They've got two fullbacks who can get into the attack as well. And I think you have a guy in Giassi Zardes who can take advantage of all the little openings New England has left over the last two, three games that the other teams were incapable of. Montreal didn't have a center forward. And you look at DK, he didn't have that last bit of speed to get out. And we saw a couple times he pulled Farrell over to the sideline. What?
Forgot the Union in the build-up.
Yeah, I forgot Union.
Easy, honestly, well. Easy to forget him.
But he pulled Farrell over to the sideline a couple times when Tejan got high, and he spun him two or three times. He didn't have that breakaway speed to get past. Giassi has that. Giassi's had the finishing all year that he's been good. And so I look at this Columbus team, and I think they have a lot of different ways that they can beat the Revs in this game. I thought Orlando, especially Philly, with the way they got down early and kind of got in their own heads, didn't really start to poke and prod against the Revs at any point throughout that game. I think this is a Columbus team that can hurt the Revs in a few different ways. If they come in and play closer to the soccer they played in the regular season and not what they did against Nashville, I think Columbus goes through.
What do you got, Doyle?
I want to say the Revs because I like the way they've played. They've put together some really compelling soccer, but it's the playoffs and it's home field and set pieces. And I just can't look past those two things. They're just such difference makers year after year after year in the postseason. So I'm going to pick the Crew. That means it's on you, Weeby.
I know. That's what I was thinking about. And then I was thinking about my
Weeby, bracket. You haven't already decided who you thought was going to win?
I was thinking about my bracket and how it's just blown to smithereens in the Eastern Conference. Mm-hmm. And I was like, no matter what I do, it's probably going to be wrong. So let's just go with what I want, which is the Revs. Because I just want to see Bruce in the final. I think that's a great storyline. I would love to see Revs Seattle. I think that, to me, is the most compelling final. And it's the most exciting final, and I'm here as a neutral rooting for what's going to make me happy.
Wait a minute. Caleb Porter at Seattle trying to win an MLS Cup.
No, it wouldn't be at happy. Seattle. It would
be Columbus.
Yeah. So it would be Caleb Porter's second MLS Cup.
I'm more into Bruce Schmetzer, to be honest with you.
Really?
I'm more into that. More into him coming in and like ruining the quote-unquote dynasty bid.
So we'll see what happens. Ziggy won with L.A. and Columbus MLS Cup. Mm-hmm. Bruce has won with DC and LA. He would be the first coach to win with three separate clubs?
Yes.
And has anyone else won with two separate ones besides those two?
I don't believe so either.
Yeah, okay. I don't think so either. Legends. All right, let's run through the rest of the show here. Of course, those games, as I've said repeatedly, you can find it at MLSsoccer.com.
This means Tata's going to have to come back.
Maybe Patrick Vieira is coming back. He doesn't have a title.
Great segue.
Columbus New England on ABC Sunday at 3, Seattle Minnesota FS1 Monday at 9:30. So more coverage at MLSsoccer.com. Let's jump right into it. Patrick Vieira, He's out at Nice. We talked about this in the last show and said Atlanta should just roll up with the Brinks truck.
Yeah, drop the bag.
Yeah, I mean, is this what they've been waiting for? Because they've been very quiet. There were some Gabriel Heinze, you know, rumblings, but really nothing to speak of when it came to coaching rumors for them. Is this the guy? Should this be the guy in the way that I've said that Greg Vanney should be the guy for the Galaxy?
100%. It's not even a question. That would be the best hire they could make at this time.
And if you're Toronto FC, you got to make it a question. You got to, like, Toronto's got to come in there with just as big a bag, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, this is the guy you want.
Yeah. It's the most desirable coach out there. There's no question. So I think Patrick Vieira, if he gets two of the same offers and say they're both astronomical, he's got
to. Who do you go with? Who should he go with? If he's looking at those two clubs, we're just playing the hypothetical game here. Should he go with?
There are great positives on both sides. For international coaches, they love Toronto. It's a great international city. More, you feel like a European city. I think he'd love that setup. I think working with Ali Curtis, I think he'd enjoy that as well. And then on the flip side, Atlanta, kind of just, you have unlimited funds. You can really, you know, it's a really interesting project. The city, I think, would really embrace Patrick Vieira, the culture. I do believe it's a win-win for Patrick Vieira. It's a win-win for MLS.
Do we think it'll happen? Because Patrick Vieira used MLS and his experience here to make the jump to Nice. Is this a situation where he would come back? Or is he thinking, I want to be in Europe. That's why I went to Europe. I'd like to find the next opportunity here and I'll wait for it.
I'll say this, in a vacuum, there would have been three jobs I would have said he would have come back for, and these are two of them. So that's the only reason I think it's a possibility. I mean, if he can put together something in Atlanta like he did at NYCFC, but in that atmosphere, in that stadium, on the stage that they sort of can play on, that I think you can pitch that to him and say, one, Tata went from here to coach Mexico. So there is that stage there. But also, if this team competes in CCL, I mean, they're going to do things that MLS teams haven't done just in the way it's going to look. And I think that goes internationally. And that's something that you can pitch Patrick Vieira on.
Whoa. You can also not do well and still get the Dutch Holland national team coach. You also have that to look forward to. You can say, hey, you can come here and it cannot work out. And maybe you get to take over France in the future, right? Yeah. So I do believe that. When you look at this project for Patrick Vieira, you go to Nice and they got a new owner who's a British guy, ton of money, but just couldn't get it done. So where can you go from Nice, where it's not really top level and you weren't a success, that would be more appealing than taking over a project like a Toronto or an Atlanta, where you're going to have significant funds to invest?
It would significant be funds, but the question will be, how much say do they give him in terms of the roster build? Right. And I think that would be a big question for Toronto in particular, because Ali Curtis has not gotten a chance to do that yet. And even Bill Manning, you could say, hasn't had a chance to do that yet, because Greg Vanney was so central to everything.
They did a little bit. I mean, they let
Joe a little bit. No, for sure. But that was as much Greg Vanney's roster as it was Ali. So if Patrick Vieira comes in and says, I want to have almost complete control over who we sign with, I think that could be a stumbling block, maybe more for Toronto than for Atlanta. Because at this point, with the way Atlanta's signings have gone over the past 2.5 years, you kind of want someone new with their hand on the wheel and making decisions about what the roster should look like. But it's interesting either way. To get back to what Charlie said, the most desirable coach on the market, Patrick Vieira, the other option would be Greg Vanney, who we haven't talked about on the pod yet. Like we talked about it in one of the postgame shows. He's out at Toronto, and it seems like Galaxy, right? Like,
it's been so quiet that you know it's already done.
Yeah, right.
If it wasn't, we'd be always hearing like LA Galaxy. It's so quiet that you know it's already for him to walk away from Toronto.
Yeah, he doesn't leave that job with a question. That's
a guarantee. Yeah. So
yeah,
we know. And it's the right job. It's the right job for both parties. The timing is right. Everything is right. He did what he could in Toronto. He said in his comments afterwards, "I like a project." Well, look, that's a huge project. in LA. And it's not just a, hey, can we get the first team up to the level we want it to? It's kind of the age-old question with the Galaxy that's been there since the Bruce days, since they did Los Dos, since they had the Academy role, and since they were signing those homegrown players. Think about the Villarreals, for instance. Jack McBean, just to throw another name at you. Can we link
Tristan
our
Bowen.
Academy and youth talent to our first team effectively? And can we create a real pipeline that both gets first team minutes and then we can sell players on from? And can we mix that with successful TAM signings? They haven't. Can we mix that with successful DP signings of recently? Not really, other than Zlatan. Like, he could go in there and Dennis Taclosa could say, it's you and me, man. Like, tell me what you want. I'll be your eyes and ears and your mechanism to go build this team in the way that we both see it. But you can have the influence. And oh, by the way, you've run successful academies and started successful academies all over North America.
Well, that's what Tata did it with Atlanta. And that's why they were so successful. When the coach is picking the team, because it's his tactics, it's his philosophy, he should be the one to really have a say on who I want, who's going to make my vision come true. And that's why Tata Martino, when he went to Atlanta, he said, hey, I'm making the decisions here. If you want me, I pick my players. I get my guys. And a lot of those guys, they're not coming. Miggy Almiron's not going to Atlanta if it's not Tata Martino. You want to play for a coach who has respect, who has connections, who can get you to where you ultimately want to go. Patrick Vieira is that guy. He's been in Europe. He has those connections. If I'm learning from Patrick Vieira, just ask Jack Harrison and what he's doing in the Premier League right now. It's because he gave him the belief in the tools to get over there.
Is Greg Vanney that guy, or is Greg Vanney the guy that weaves all the different pieces of the LA Galaxy together into something that resembles something coherent?
I think Dennis Taclosa is that guy. Dennis Taclosa carries weight internationally, mm-hmm. especially in Mexico. Greg Vanney, I think, though, with his success and what he's done, can get in the room and it's not unexpected. And he knows how to handle international superstars 100%. Like Jovinko, U.S. superstars, Victor Vasquez, whoever else. He's worked with huge names. He's worked with young players. So I think players wouldn't be thrown off by the and say, who is this guy? I don't know who this is. But Dennis Taclosa is the guy for the Galaxy who gets you in the room. And to your point, if Taclosa is the one who hires Greg Vanney, then that relationship has to be strong. And you'd expect it would be because that's his pick. And that's what the Galaxy need, to Charlie's point, because then they can work together. And Greg Vanney can say, like he said in Toronto for 7 years, I want to play with wide guys. I want dangerous wingers. And Dennis Taclosa can say, here are your four options. This is what I can do.
We shall see. Some other news on this front, because it's a domino effect. As soon as Greg Vanney said he wasn't coming back, Chris Armas has been out there, but he's emerged as the favorite for the DC United job per Steve Goff at the Washington Post. What do we think about this?
I love it.
Yeah, I think it makes sense.
Yeah, I think he got a really bad situation in New York.
Wait.
Which was... What?
A really bad situation?
I think following Jesse as the assistant getting elevated was tough. And it was a good team, although it was a franchise that doesn't exactly treat good teams as something that's precious to be kept together.
I'm with Goss. Doyle, I wouldn't say it's a bad situation.
I think it's one, tough to go from an assistant to a head coach. I think two, it's tough to follow a guy who's coaching a Champions League team, a thing an American has never done in history. And then mm-hmm. the third thing I think was it came at a weird time in the Red Bull structure because it was right around when Ralph stepped away and the commitment to different ideas changed. And so he kind of got stuck in this in-between place and it went poorly, which is on him. I think it's exciting, a job like DC for him to see what are his soccer ideas, what does he want to create? And it's not a team with expectations, so he kind of has a blank slate to get it done. I think this would be a good signing from both sides. That's all.
There was some doubt there, it seemed. Or at least some dissent.
I think Chris Armas, from the limited interactions I've had with him, fantastic individual. And you won't hear anyone say a bad word about him. Great guy, great person, great teammate, great locker room guy, role model. But as far as coaching, I'm not so sure DC are doing themselves any service by going out and getting a quote-unquote failure from a rival team. Why would you go and sign a coach who didn't do well and it was your rival team and bring him to DC and think things he's going to do something different or he's going to change the course of where things have gone for DC United as of late? That doesn't make sense to me. And if I'm a DC United fan and I love the supporters, I really truly have a special place in my heart because of everything they are and what they've done, what they've meant to the league and how they supported that club. They cannot be happy with that decision. That is not a decision where you think, man, we're really pumped for the future. Like, we have a lot going for us, because Chris Armas has to prove himself still. It's not like you're getting a coach who has who can rest on his laurels. Not that you want a coach to rest on his laurels, but it's not a coach who has a lot of success behind him, and you feel really confident that he can get you to the promised land. So for me, it's one of those really underwhelming signings.
There would be a lot to prove. There would be a lot to prove on Chris Armas's part.
What would he have to prove?
That he could take a team and make it better. Because that Red Bulls team just, I would say they got pretty consistently worse in his 2 years in charge. And then he made just a really horrible call of deciding not to press Atlanta in the playoffs. And that's, again, like that is a career defining loss when you go away from what you've done so well and what has beaten Atlanta literally every time in a game of that magnitude, and you take a 3-0 loss. That was just brutal. So he would have to prove that he's up to the job of being a head coach. He was a really well respected and beloved assistant. As Charlie said, everybody I know who's talked to and knows Chris Armas thinks he's the greatest guy in the world. He would have a lot to prove as a head coach.
Their last head coach had a lot to prove too. We'll see what happens with that one. That's from Steve Goff. We'll follow that closely. Before we get out of here, Andre says we have 5 minutes left, so they're cutting us close. And frankly, I can't listen to those ornaments on Doyle's beard bang together anymore. Who should sign Dom Dwyer? Or is that even a relevant question anymore?
Las Vegas Lights. Doesn't he feel like a Las Vegas Lights signing? Gosh. No, what? In an ambitious USL team? Guys, he's been hurt for 2 years, right? Yeah. He needs to prove something too. But was it that hard of burn?
No, it hurt.
It's
jarring. It's just like,
yeah.
it was definitely whiplash.
Yeah, you know,
maybe Atlanta United.
Yeah, no, you're like Cincinnati,
Nashville's looking for a striker. He and Mike Jacobs back in the day, they got a relationship.
Yeah, Atlanta Kansas signed Kubo Torres in the middle of this season.
Atlanta signed Adam Jones.
How'd that work out?
I know, but we're just saying.
Maybe he and Adrian Heath reunite next year in Minnesota, because Minnesota is probably going to be on the hunt for a striker.
Probably. They're definitely going to be on the hunt for a striker.
Kyle will be on his 18th MLS team. So
Nashville shout just as they're probably going to take, they did it with Abu Zanlati. They're going to take a flyer on a few attacking players.
That's why
maybe one of them.
Yeah, why not? Get him. Does it need to have an NWSL team? I don't know.
That salary is going to be
drastically. That's the opposite of a flyer. Yeah, the flyer has to be low salary. Yeah. So we'll see how that one works out. Just something I saw that it's interesting. Paul Aguilar, SI, has like a 2-sentence report saying he's going to
Austin. It's gone now. It's off the website.
Wow. Well, at least we can confirm that Miguel Layun was in Austin looking at Christmas lights. So we have that.
Did we loot Rich? Is Rich living in Austin?
Basically, at this point.
Layun has always talked about his love for Major League Soccer and how he wants to play it. So
That Austin team has
to. Any smart person would do that, to be honest.
Austin has to have an L3 player. A former, current, whatever it is.
Yes.
They have to have that representation.
Agreed.
Doubly so. We'll see what happens with them. The expansion draft coming pretty soon. You're already seeing people talk about who might be protected and the like. So we'll let you know we have details on that one. We'll end here. Any thoughts on that U.S. national team roster that's together right now? They're going to play El Salvador on the 9th at 7:30 p.m. Eastern. That's on Unimas. It's fun. It's fun to see sort of the vibe. I think, you know, this sounds stupid, but like the content that's coming out of that camp feels positive, and it's a lot of smiles, and it just kind of makes me warm inside to see a bunch of these guys in MLS that we watch every week, and especially young guys get an opportunity.
Olympic team, basically.
Yeah, yeah, but that's fun.
Yeah,
that's nice. Anybody in there that you're watching in particular?
Daryl DK. Yeah, Daryl DK. Yeah. We all want to see Daryl DK in the red, white, and blue, right?
And for sure.
Daryl DK. Mark McKenzie.
Yes.
Io Akinola. And I want to see Brendan Aaronson too. If he had a great year, but there are times where I felt like, oh, I need a little bit more from you. I need like the physical aspect of your game, because it looks all pretty when you're untouched and you can turn, you got great awareness and you've really grown a lot. But when the game gets gritty, nitty gritty, and you're in Central America and you're playing against El Salvador, in El Salvador or Honduras and Honduras, and those games are, it's all about, it's a fight. Whatever you can do to gain any inch, tackle, grabbing, clawing, fighting, and it's not pretty. The ball is bouncing all over the pitch. The grass is, you know, there's divots in the grass. It's long. I need a little bit more from Aaronson. So in this match, I want to see how he can handle some of those tackles and the way they play rough, if he can still excel in an environment like that.
You know, you might think in like a post-COVID world that what I would want the most is just like hug my friends and be around people, but CONCACAF World Cup qualifying in away matches is actually what I need the most.
The best part is when the Honduran government explains why the game has to be at 1 p.m. in the middle of the heat and like all the excuses. That's my favorite part.
Yeah, that's some good stuff. Anyway, on that note, we're out of here. Enjoy the matches on Sunday and on Monday. We will be bringing you the post-game shows after those as well, I believe. We'll get you more details at Extra Time. As always, subscribe to the pod. Rate us if you like us. If you don't, I guess keep it to yourself, or sometimes you throw it in there anyway and entertain us. That's Charlie. From us. It's been a great Audi 2020 MLS Cup playoffs so far. I didn't actually think you guys dumped that hard on me. I thought it was like a very Detlef Schrempf, like just kind of...
It was literally like we were up like 102 to 40, and it was just like, you know what,
gamesmanship.
Yeah, let's just do like a soft, like little, like
Dean dunk. Smith four corners on
the rim. Gotcha. Just lay up off the glass.
It's already lopsided. Cool. There's no need.
Enjoy your night, everybody. If you're still awake or on the West Coast, for the rest of you, go to sleep. And if you're listening via podcast, we love you. We thank you. We'll see you later.